Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's the Savage Nation. Just you'll see where I'm going. Give me a break here. Come on, guys. Speed it up. That's it. Let's get the Strauss moving here. So as the world turns, come on, let's go, guys. Bring it up to the fast part. The Blue Danube, is that it, what we're listening to? Yes. Now, many of you have heard this in the film 2001. Perhaps some of you are musically oriented and you know exactly what we're playing. Of course, it doesn't match Obama, it doesn't match Obamacare, Richard Holbrook, the war criminal, according to many in Europe. It doesn't match the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergs. It doesn't match the secret hand that runs America. And that's why I'm going to talk about this for a moment. Here I am sitting with the worst back pain I've ever had in my life, and I'm a healthy guy. I've been real lucky. I told you that I've had a great run, but I'm debilitated. I can hardly move my legs. It's a result of a tremendous stress, and all I can say is curse the litigious, and may all of their children get what they give to others. And thank God for dogs. That's another thing I got to tell you. As I lay curled up in bed before the show, it's the strangest thing. My little guy Teddy, who usually sleeps at the foot of the bed, I don't know how. I don't moan. I don't complain. He came to the back of my back and pushed his body against my lower back through the covers. And I said, how do they know these things? Anyway, at the end of the show, I'm going to have some body work done. And this too shall pass. It's just what it is. But here's the paradox, or shall I say the crux of the strange situation I find myself in. I am supposed to go to a dinner dance tomorrow night, a tuxedo black tie dinner dance put on by a cultural organization in San Francisco. Now, it is the antithesis of my being. I'm a recluse. I generally don't go out. It's the opposite of Charlie Chaplin with the cane and the mustache. And here I am. Suddenly, I basically bought a table for 10 several months ago because I have a problem. And you know what my problem is? Sometimes I blur fantasy with reality when it comes to life events. I hope I don't do it much when it comes to politics. I got to admit, I hope I don't. But as Einstein was willing to admit that perhaps his theory was wrong, and he spent the last years of his life attempting to prove that his theory was wrong, even though he couldn't do it, I don't mind if you try to prove my theories wrong about Obama or what's going on in the world. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I don't believe I'm wrong. However, when it comes to reality, I have a little bit of a disconnect. I'm the kind of guy who remains an eternal optimist, and I'm always disappointed. So when this came up, I said, I think I'll make a donation, I'll buy the table, and I'll invite, you know, 8 friends, because it'll be a combination holiday party, birthday party, New Year's Eve party, end of year party, and we'll have the black tie, it'll be a dinner dance, and I'll enjoy it. But now that it approaches and my back is out, I haven't any idea why I am going. I mean, I'd much rather stay home in bed with an aspirin and watch, I don't know, military history perhaps, or the world's craziest moments when fans in Spain or Venezuela wreck stands because the ball went in the wrong place. So here I am going on to the website from last year's event of this nature, and they're the very people I have avoided all of my life. Now, I've said that about TSA people on the other end of the social spectrum, and it's true. All of my life, I have worked very hard to never have to be around people like those who work for the TSA. In other words, every dollar I made, I moved to a better neighborhood to get away from them, and there you are. No matter what you've achieved, if you have to go through an airport, the very people you've run from are sticking their they're probing your proboscis, let's put it to you that way. So now let's look at the other side of the society scale. Here are the plastic surgery cases, who go to these types of events. There are various peoples who look like a combination of Jerry Mahoney, the puppet. This guy looks, I can't mention his name, but this man I am looking at from last year's dinner looks like he's had more surgery than Joan Rivers. Here, I can't even read their names because I'll get a lawsuit. Why do I want to be around them, I'm asking myself. Why do I want to go to a party with these people? 99% of them are friends of Nancy Pelosi. 99% of them are Democrats. 89% of the 99% are not worth 10 cents but put on airs like they still have money, even though they're living on a house in Pacific Heights that they can't afford, that they inherited from their grandmother. And yet I'm looking forward to it in a strange way. So I have no question for you, other than I'm sick and tired of politics for right now, so I thought I would bring up something I'm going to do tomorrow night, assuming I can get out of here and get over there. So I have my little table in the. By the way, I'm an inveterate planner. Usually the wife in the family does that. Usually the wife in the family cooks. The opposite of I like to cook or get takeout in a box and watch television. And I like to plan things immaculately. So here I have the table set up with the name on it, Savage, with the table number. And I had to lay out everybody's name and I had to decide where they sit. It was very much like planning a wedding. I am going to wear a tuxedo. I have the same tuxedo I wore to my daughter's wedding 10 years ago. And I am proud to say that I actually still fit in the thing, which is both a good thing and a bad thing, because as people get older, they usually shrivel. You notice that old people shrivel up and they lose weight? Well, I've neither gained weight nor lost weight. It's sort of like a guy who has a military uniform that he puts on and it still fits. It doesn't even bulge anywhere. It's absolutely the same as I was 10 years ago. I suppose that's a good thing. I can't even buy myself a new tie. I have the same cumberbum set, even though it's cummerbun. It's the same cumberbum set, because most people who wear them are bums, as I can understand it, that I've had for 20 years. It was made from, when I bought this, I bought these from kimonos. They were fashionable 20 years ago. Remember they were ripping up and selling kimonos in Japan, and they made ties and cummerbuns out of them? I have the most amazing tie and stuff, but what's the point? The only thing I can think of is drinking as much of the champagne that I'm providing as fast as possible. Because, you see, I'm not going to drink the house wine. No matter how elegant these dinners are, the wine is undrinkable. It's usually donated by one of the contributors who owns a terrible winery in Sonoma or Napa, and they provide this kind of waxy Chardonnay that women who don't know wine like to drink that leaves people... Well, just leaves me sick, so I decided to buy some very, very costly champagne to provide for my table, because I don't want to drink the swill. Now, what is the social point am I going? I have no idea. As I said to you, I make mistakes, but I am going. It would be people like Richard Holbrook are going to be there on a minor scale in a provincial city, a little small provincial city on the bay. You know, it's sort of like America is, as you well know, divided across social barriers, no matter what they say. And San Francisco is sort of the Marseille of America. It's the, let us say, the backside of America, San Francisco. It likes to hold itself up as a truly sophisticated Paris of the West, but in fact it has almost no resemblance to Paris whatsoever, which is what makes it very charming. I have nothing more to add on this other than I hope I'm well enough to go. And now if you want me to, what's today's date? Tuesday? Tuesday of the week. Monday is entertainment, food, restaurants. Tuesday is open. Wednesday is the money day. Thursday is nutrition and health. Friday is religion and philosophy. So today is an open day anyway. So frankly, I'd rather do an open day. I mean, you want me to talk about Richard Holbrook and who he is? You think you really care? They're making him into a super god already. But I don't really want to spend my time on him, frankly. All you got to know is about Richard Holbrook is this. They're making him into the great ambassador. All you got to know is that he was on the American International Group, Inc. Board of Directors. That's AIG in 08 when the insurance company locked in the bonuses that were stoking national outrage. Okay, that's number one. During the period that Richard Holbrook was on the AIG board, they took up investment strategies that basically led to a near collapse and forced you to bail out the AIG company. Okay? Now, there are others that you need to know about. This guy stands in the same league, Holbrook, as Henry Kissinger, in my opinion. And I'm not a big fan of Henry Kissinger. Holbrooke is an insider. He's a member of the global elite, along with Henry Kissinger, David Rockefeller, and others. They're all the American Friends of Bilderberg. Who are the Bilderbergs? I pointed out in Trickle Up Poverty. It's an organization that takes money from Exxon, ARCO, IBM, and other transnational corporations, and has its meetings funded by the globalist Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and the Carnegie Endowment Fund. So you've got to understand that the globalist outfit, the Trilateral Commission, is also an organization that old Holbrooke, along with his good old buddy Hank Kissinger, belonged to. I think I have laid out a thumbnail sketch of the man that the newspapers are calling honorable this, honorable that. I don't know whether he was honorable or not, but as far as I'm concerned, what he did to the Serbs alone puts him into the rogue galleries, the rogue gallery of American figures, as far as I am concerned. I do remember during the bombing of Serbia by Bill Clinton and NATO, they were the 78 worst days of my life when I saw this nation of Serbia decimated by Bill Clinton and the international gangsters in order to steal Kosovo from them, in order to run a pipeline through Kosovo. It was astonishing how the world let them get away with it. But you got to remember something. At that time, see, now I'm doing it. I didn't want to do it. I guess, you know, it's the man who knew too much. So let it go at that. So what would you like to talk about that's of any interest to you? No funeral for Madoff's son. Made a body to be cremated without service. That's a horrible death. The body of Mark Madoff, who killed himself by hanging himself with a dog leash on the second anniversary of his father Bernie's arrest for a massive Ponzi scheme, will be cremated without any funeral service, sources told the Post. Well, you know, I'm not going to get into whether you want to be cremated or buried. It's not exactly what I'd like to talk about right now. But, you know, there is something here in the Madoff story that should be talked about. When a father is evil, and I know some people who are very evil, their children usually pay for their evilhood. Their innocent children usually pay for the father's evils. Let's say the father is the type who sues everybody. Let us say the father is the type who robs from everybody. Let us say the father is the type who makes everybody as miserable as he can. Usually the children pay for that through horrible diseases onto the third generation. Now, you talk about Mark Madoff. Was he innocent? I don't know, but I don't think so. I mean, he lived off his father's scam, and although him and his brother Andrew have never been criminally charged because they claim they had no knowledge of their dad's scam, I don't believe it. And they made millions of dollars off the father's scam. And what about Ruthie? Ruthie the wife, why is she not in an orange jumpsuit doing macrame somewhere in Connecticut? The man lived in a multi-million dollar home in Soho, and he couldn't find a job at a respectable Wall Street firm. Why not? Because they wouldn't have him, because he wasn't smart enough to be a crook like them. He was only smart enough to be a crook for his father, in my opinion. Sorry, I got a little bit of a cough today. A funeral director at the Andret Funeral Home, Gramercy Park, took the body today for the medical exam. So, I'll take a break. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's like a weird day. I mean, you're into holiday entertainment and shopping gift guides and things, and you don't really want to hear any of it. Please don't call me with any back pain remedies like mustard plaster on, mixed in with moth wings put on your right ear. Come on, I don't want to go into that. I'll get through this. It is what it is. All things resolve themselves or they don't. And I have, even though I'm not Irish, I have the philosophy of the Irish in that. If you're not feeling well, there's only two things that could happen. Either you'll get better or you'll get worse. If you get better, there's nothing to worry about. If you'll get worse, there's only two things to worry about. Either you'll get better or you'll die. If you die, you'll have nothing. You know, that kind of, it's a whole sequence. So, it's nothing. That's all. I'm not sitting in a foxhole in the Ardennes forest waiting for the Germans to roll over me with tanks. I'm not fighting the Germans as they're invading Stalingrad, living on ice water. I'm not a guy in Afghanistan right now who's been forgotten by the American people and being abused by the government and trying them for war crimes for doing their job. You know, I got to tell you something. I told you I have another case now where I sent the guy $10,000 because he's... I don't know whether he's falsely accused. Let me put it to you this way. As far as I'm concerned, every soldier is innocent until proven guilty. The Taliban are not innocent until proven guilty. You know, we send guys to die in Iraq and Afghanistan, and they do their job, and now our government wants to put them away for life or give them the death sentence. I would like to know, and here's something I want to ask somebody who would know, because I spoke to a former member of someone who fought in Iraq yesterday, and he's a young guy, and he said, I don't understand how they can try soldiers for having committed a crime on a battlefield. He said, I don't understand that part of it. I said, that's because we have the worst people in the history of the world now running America and the American military. And I don't mean the generals on the ground. I'm talking about the cowardly brass in the Pentagon. And I'm asking a question that it's legalistic. If I were an attorney for one of these guys who was being tried for to serve life in prison for having whacked, let's say, a Taliban commander, after the Taliban commander killed his men in a roadside bombing, they capture the guy, they have him in captivity, and then they allege that they were shot, that the Taliban guy was shot in cold blood, while our guy says, no, he tried to escape, he tried to hit me. Why do we assume that the Taliban commander was innocent and he was executed by our guy? Why don't we assume the other way? So I would like to say this. If I were a military lawyer, I would bring this case up to the next guy who's falsely accused, and there's plenty of them rotting in various courts around this country that you know nothing about. You know, no one in the media talks about them, but I'm the kind of guy who will find the forgotten men and let you know about them. So let me tell you this. I would argue that you never told this young man, when you recruited him, that there was a chance that should he do something that you deem to be illegal, he could be tried for a war crime or tried for his life. Did you advise this recruit that he needed a lawyer to read the recruitment papers? Did you advise any recruit to the American military that they have a right to counsel before joining the military? Because if you did not, then you have no right to try this man because you signed them up without any valid protections. And now you're putting him on trial for his life? Now, I am not a lawyer, but let me tell you something. That's where I would go.
Savage.
It is the one and only Savage Nation. And we know that the country is bankrupt because of the last two administrations, and the current one is just adding fuel to the fire. I mean, you know, Obama inherited a $1 trillion debt from George Bush, the liberal socialist, and now he's turned it into over $3 trillion. He's got a mad woman named Pelosi to his right. He's got Harry Reid, who just re-won by the skin of his nose, to his left. And they don't stop. They're just not stopping. They just won't stop. It's a government that's out of control. But other than that, I mean, what else do you really want to know about? Holbrook says his last words were stop this war. The man started the war, in my opinion. See, now they're trying to paint him as something he wasn't. They're making him into some saintly diplomat who tried to stop the war and he was into peace. Good God, how far does this government media complex go? Doesn't anyone remember a thing about Richard Holbrooke? What else is in the news? King this. Oh, he got out on bail already? The WikiLeaks guy is out on bail? Here's a guy who almost brought down the entire Western world, and he's not banned from Britain, and he's out on bail. They wouldn't even hear my case, but they banned me and put me. It's crazy. England is finished. England, they don't need mad bombers in England. They bomb their own country with their stupidity. What else is in there? Nothing. Religion. There's so much news. Who cares? It's too much. People can't take it anymore. There's too much already. What do you want to hear about the election in 2012? No one wants to hear it. I went to the mall again last night. I knew my life would change like this one day. I don't even want to go to San Francisco anymore. There's nothing to see. Strippers, bums. There's nothing there. Like, I used to enjoy walking around Chinatown, North Beach in San Francisco. There's nothing there. A bunch of deadbeat bums and tourists drinking bad wine, you know, sitting around the second glass of wine already. They're screaming. Then throw a tiramisu into them with the wine, and the sugar takes over their brain, and they're already yelling from the rooftop. I can't eat around that. Is there something wrong with me that I don't like the sound of other people's voices? Is that a syndrome? The reason I saw a show last night on TV about tormented genius. And I'm not saying I'm a tormented genius. I'm a genius, but I'm not tormented. I'm an anguished guy. In many ways, anguished, but not tormented. And there's a different level. It was about a kid who was a brilliant pianist, but he could, unfortunately, was born blind, and he had very poor motor control. And it was very sad. It was very touching. But thank God he had a good mother who didn't destroy him and give him away like my brother. You know, sometimes I wonder if my poor brother was born today like he was born, if he didn't have peasants for parents and psychotics for doctors. I don't know who he was. Maybe he was a genius. They said he couldn't see. They said he couldn't hear. They said he couldn't do this, couldn't do that. And don't talk to him. And I'd go up to my poor little brother, and I'd whistle to him, and his eyes would light up. I knew there was motor control. I knew that he had a soul in there. And a doctor, oh, don't talk to him. You know, you don't understand. Then they gave him away to a home at age 5. It ripped my guts out. It tore everyone's heart out in the family. He died in a snake pit after 20 years of hell in a mental hospital, you know, in a hospital. That's how they treated people like that then. So you know where I get this desire to protect the helpless? It's from him. And also the ability to communicate and the ability to communicate with animals. But aside from that, maybe I picked up a lot of negatives from it. I don't really know. I know that I don't like being around idle conversation. It drives me almost insane. In other words, if I go to a restaurant, I have to listen to people near me talking about inane things. And they have every right to. God bless them. They're paying. They could talk about their mother-in-law's brassiere for all they care. I don't care. But I don't want to listen to it. So therefore, I can't take it. And so so it's like they said this kid who was blind in the great piano, the musician, and he was really amazing, that when he was a kid, they showed him on videotape that his mother, like his ears would start to hurt him if he had to listen to any sounds that came from outside the house. It's like me with leaf blower people or garbage trucks at 6 o'clock in the morning or the construction sounds. They make me almost insane. And I know most people can blow it off like it's nothing. But being in the radio business, I have super sensitive hearing. I always have. I don't use headphones. You know, I'm the only person that I know of in the major media, in the major radio media, who has never used headphones in radio. I don't know if you know that. I set up a system with a Gentner sound suppression system that's unique to talk radio that nobody else uses so far as I know. It's a very interesting system. But most people in talk radio, when they talk to you, they have headphones on. They look like Dukakis in a tank. They have like this goofy look with headphones. Or if people want to look cool, they put on headphones and, you know, sing into a microphone. I hate headphones. I would be deaf by now had I used them all these years. So I have a speaker on my desks that brings you in. So if you talk to me, I actually hear you through the speaker. Now, the reason most people can't use it is because if you didn't have the system that we installed in all of my studios, it would cause feedback into the microphone. Very unique, which is why the show is different in a way, because when I talk with you, you get a natural feeling like we're in the same room, because we are. You're not in a headphone, because it's very schizophrenic. Isn't it schizophrenic for talk shows to have headphones on and while he's talking is hearing his own voice in his head and then he's listening to you? It sounds like madness, truthfully. Anywho, so here we are. That's why I'm not interested in the news right now. I'm interested in other things. I don't know. I'm not interested in anything right now. Obama's not the topic I'm interested in. Richard Holbrooke, no one ever heard of him. Madoff's son, not really something to celebrate. It's sort of biblical. But when I heard about it, I got sick. The thought of a guy hanging himself while his little boy, 2 years old, was sleeping in a room nearby, it didn't please me, okay? Go to jail, yes. Take his assets, yes. Take the wife, put her in an orange jumpsuit. Make her clean a Haitian rest home in Boca Raton, yes, if she's found guilty. But no, not the hanging. I don't like that part of it. Now they're going to cremate the guy's remains. Where do you go with that? See, I don't like watching those shows like from the ancient days where they dig up the tomb and he's got 4,000, you know, 40,000 ceramic warriors in China that he took to the next world with him. You know, why do they disinter these graves? It's very ghoulish, the whole thing of digging up ancient graves and looking at people. I think that they should be banned around the world, frankly. I really don't want to hear any more about the value to science. There is no value to science. They're just basically ghouls and grave robbers. As far as I'm concerned, the whole sanctity of life seems to be blown on the planet today because of the internet, because of the media, because of the thirst for something, some new salacious little item it's a new thrilling thing for the vermin on television, like Nancy Grace and those people on The View that give me the creeps. They're like cockroaches, human cockroaches in dresses with lipstick. What kind of world are we living in? Everything is a show topic, including digging someone up from the ground. How could there be so many missing girls for Nancy Grace to find? Every day, another missing girl that this vampire finds. How in the world could that be television? Who watches this? I ask myself. What people watch this? Immediately, my mind says those who stay home and vote for Obama and collect welfare. But there must be a larger audience than that. I don't really know. So here we are. The age of the classic is over. The age of everything dignified is over. There is no dignity amongst human beings anymore, even amongst the dead. There's no dignity. Where is the dignity? When you look at a man in a tuxedo who holds himself up as an ambassador, and the next day you read that he was found in a car with a 9-year-old boy outside of a motel in Tennessee or whatever. You know, give me an example. There's no dignity. So you assume everybody's a phony. Everyone's no good. Everybody's a pervert. It's not true, but the world has been ripped down to that level because of the vermin in the media. That's what it comes down to. Now they go a few steps further. Now they dig up bodies now, 5,000 years later, and tell you it's for science. Not for science. There's a certain perversion in that. So then you watch National Geographic. It used to be Nat Geo and I grew up, basically, when you were young, you read it because the girls didn't wear tops in Africa. And but then you grew up, and you started to read National Geographic because it was a very serious but popular publication, and it was very intriguing. The maps were worth the price. They've gone way beyond that. Now every day with Nat Geo, another comet and a hit, and 5 billion years ago, the Earth already had a sea, and it proves it, and man was added as an add-on. Every day the Earth's coming to an end. Any second you walk out of your house, you think that the continent's going to collapse under your feet, or the sky is going to fall down upon you. They become nothing but hysterics feeding mass hysteria. That's National Geographic today. Then you want to go down the channel. I mean, you don't know what to believe in. So then you come back. Okay, you go the whole circle. And where do you wind up back? Okay, now here comes the religion. Now you come back. If you're a Marxist, you read the quotations from Chairman Mao, the little red book. If you're a religious person, so you read the Bible, preferably not one of the liberal versions of the Bible. And there's your choice today. You either read quotations from Chairman Mao Zedong, if you're a communist from San Francisco. I'm going to read. I actually have a copy of both in my hands because you have to understand the enemy in order to defeat the enemy. Here is quotations from Chairman Mao Zedong on socialism and communism. Nah, should I read it to you? You don't want to hear any of this. Here it is. Here's America today. You ready for this? Chapter 29 from Mao Zedong's Cadres. In order to guarantee that our party and country do not change their color, we must not only have a correct line and correct policies, but must train and bring up millions of successors who will carry on the cause of proletarian revolution. Now, if that's not a roadmap to what Obama is doing to this country with the education czar, with the education system, with the propaganda in the media, I'd like to know what is. Then he writes, this is Mao Zedong, the butcher of Beijing who killed 60 million of his fellow Chinese, either directly or through starvation. And he goes on to the Marxist-Leninist revolutionary cause started by the older generation of proletarian revolutionaries and how to maintain it going forward. And I have said to you, I've argued over and over and over again, I've given the evidence that Obama is classically a Marxist-Leninist. You have to understand there's a reality to what I say. It's not saying it for effect or to sell you a book. It's to warn you the danger we are in. And then he goes on to how to maintain genuine Marxist-Leninist philosophy and not be a revisionist like Khrushchev wearing the cloak of Marxism-Leninism. In other words, Khrushchev at that time wasn't even radical enough for Mao Zedong, the butcher. I always liked Khrushchev. He always reminded me of my uncle, one of my favorite uncles. Khrushchev, remember with the shoe when he banged it? Many of you don't remember that. I kind of had a fondness for Nikita Khrushchev after he took his shoe off in the UN and banged it on a desk. I respected any man who could take off his shoe during a meeting and slam it on a desk. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hey,
And then the third lesson and tip actually come from two of my favorite political philosophers, Mao Zedong and Mother Teresa, not often coupled with each other.
That's a czar for Barack Obama, who was fired last year. Anita Dunn, who was extolling the virtues of Chairman Mao Zedong, who killed 60 million of his fellow Chinese. You ask any educated Chinese if I'm wrong. Don't ask your college professor. Most of them are too sold on the Marxist-Leninist philosophy to even know whether or not that is true. You ask any educated Chinese or you read a verifiable history. And here is a czar in the White House that had to be thrown out. But she's only one of many who are still there. So don't assume that because Obama lost in the last election and the Dems took 60, lost 60 seats that they're through. I have studied Marxists and Leninists most of my adult life. They never quit. They never give up. And they're not quitting and they're not giving up. And if you think that Obama's through pushing his socialist, communist, and Leninist agenda, you're mistaken. You are absolutely mistaken. Because the theoretical basis upon which he was raised, which is Marxism or Leninism, never ends. It's part of his DNA at this point. So we do have problems. But I know you don't want to hear it anymore. It's like, what good is listening to this anymore? Right? What's the good of listening to this anymore? You don't want to hear it anymore. Portland, Oregon. Jay, you're on the Savage Nation.
Doctor, I do need to hear it from you. And as I said to your screener, I've read plenty of conservative books from some of your competition on the air I won't mention. And I've read several of your original books, but this trickle-up poverty is by far, without being patronizing to you and the audience, the best book yet, the most thorough. And I wouldn't recommend reading it before you go to bed at night because you'll get all worked up and you can't sleep after that. It's awesome.
Well, it's heavily researched. That's why yesterday when we found out that a federal judge had in essence driven a stake through the heart of the vampire of Obamacare, I really was very pleased. And I went back to Trickle Up Poverty and I read parts of the chapter because the book laid out the groundwork for stopping Obamacare.
I think the thing that really stunned me was your work on Obama's genealogy, where he's come from, a lot of stuff that just didn't get out front. And then the market meltdown, I did not realize how much was involved in there. I appreciate what you wrote. I love when you keep talking that way, sir. It's red hot.
All right. So you don't think it's boring for me to go back to this?
I don't think what's necessary is boring. It may not be the funnest thing to listen to, but there's a time and place for everything. But I appreciate it when you nail it and when you shed your righteous indignation. Few people can do it like you. And it's straight. And
well, I'm glad I'm on in Portland again. You're listening to me on a Portland station, right?
Yes, you are. Yes.
So, yeah, there's not a lot of options for you up in Portland, Oregon. It was riddled with liberals from San Francisco and other environs of California who destroyed your fair city about 20 years ago. I don't know how in the world a patriotic American could even live there anymore without feeling like they're going to die.
Well, you just summed it up because our state is dead broke. We're right behind you guys as far as getting out economically. It's not going to happen. And we've got a lot of problems in this state with revenue. They hate business in this state. They make sure that the unions run everything. And we've got a repeat Democratic governor just like the one that you guys got down south. And it's just a sucky situation up here as far as that goes right now, Doctor.
All right. Well, thank you for the compliments. It's listeners like you, et cetera. One line, is healthcare reform really reparations by another name? Page 26. Let me read your paragraph. For years, Marxist huckster Louis Farrakhan has been pushing for reparations for slavery. He won't rest until the government makes amends for what he views as the irreversible and lasting damage done to the African-American community. Nothing will satisfy him until Washington ponies up with some sort of an acceptable apology and piles of cash. The fact of the matter is that slavery ended in the United States something like 140 years ago, and there isn't a white American living today who ever owned a slave. This means nothing to him. In his twisted view, there's no statute of limitations on such matters. In fact, he believes innocent people should suffer. Speaking to a small gathering on the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March, here's what Farrakhan said, and he went on. And I said, Farrakhan was panhandling for reparations then, and he's still calling for it today. In a speech in February 2010, Farrakhan said President Obama had to do more on behalf of the black community to improve their lot in life. Directing his words to the president, this Obamaniac said, "Your people are suffering. Put some money on back of us." Farrakhan then blasted the white right, who he believes is conspiring to ensure President Obama doesn't serve more than one term. What does this have to do with reparations, I ask? You'll have to follow the bouncing ball on this. Healthcare reform, I wrote, is one of Obama's top agenda items. And then I said that Obamacare was, in essence, the linchpin of reparations. Okay? And there it is. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So I'll open the lines to your calls. In fact, what I'm going to do right now in a little time that remains is go to my own website, which I haven't seen today. I send articles. Here, look how we changed the headline on the book ad. Judge rules this book correct, Obamacare unconstitutional. On the right side of Michael Savage, House to vote on repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Okay, they're going to still push it. Fed sue school for refusing teachers pilgrimage to Mecca. The federal government under Eric Holder is suing a suburban Chicago school district for denying a Muslim middle school teacher unpaid leave to go to Mecca for the Hajj. You hear this? Now, you liberal SOBs keep screaming about the separation of church and state. What you really mean is the separation of Christianity from state. But you don't seem to have any problem with separating Islam from the state, do you? And that's the crux of the matter. They say the school should have permit the Muslim to take a leave to go to make a pilgrimage to Mecca, because that's part of our religion. I ask you, ladies and gentlemen, how much longer can this country survive with the boll weevils in the educational and judicial systems?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the... What are you playing with? It's the Savage Nation. You know, I want to focus on how the lawyers have destroyed the United States of America and how we absolutely must have tort reform if we're to survive. How class action lawyers should not only be stopped, but their assets seized onto the third generation. In order for this country to survive, the legal profession must be stopped and reined in or we're all dead. Let me read you a story and I'll show you what I mean. I just found this on the Los Angeles Times website. Child porn club posted photo of Down syndrome boy being molested. And the FBI announced the indictment of 16 domestic and international suspects in a child pornography ring who are believed to be part of an internet-based members-only bulletin board called Lost Boy. Authorities said that the men were initiated into the password-protected site by posting graphic photos of child pornography and had to continue posting pictures to maintain access. U.S. Attorney Andrew Baratti Jr. said, this network was reserved for your most serious traders of child pornography and boy lovers. One of the most disturbing items investigators found was a handbook project, a forum used to groom adult men interested in pursuing boys. Another disturbing find included a picture of a 9-year-old boy with Down syndrome being abused. The defendants, some of whom are from Southern California, include a Phoenix-based pediatric anesthesiologist. Pediatric anesthesiologist, and a Michigan man who admitted molesting two boys and photographing the abuse. The initial tip came in October of 08 when European law enforcement officials approached FBI agents in Copenhagen with info that a North Hollywood man had been communicating with a Danish man and Italian national about how to obtain child pornography and engage in child sex tourism in Romania. Now, you and I both know what's going to happen. You and I both know they're going to get lawyers. You and I both know the lawyers are going to argue they really didn't commit a crime. You, You and I both know that anyone found guilty of such a crime should be thrown naked into the exercise arena of the worst prisons in the world. You and I both know that will never happen. You and I both know that is because of scum in the ACLU and the vermin on the left who protect the most vile creatures on earth and attack the most noble Americans every step of the way. And that is why the legal profession has failed us, and that's why the legal profession must be altered, and that is why we must have immediate tort reform. Now, there's nothing you could say to modify any word that I just stated, not one. Nothing I said is wrong. Nothing I said is false. Nothing I said needs to be modified. Here's another one about your friends called lawyers. Investing in lawsuits. I just sent it to michaelsavage.com. Here is the issue. You have hedge funds now buying lawsuits for 30 to 50 cents on the dollar of what it might win and then taking over the lawsuit for the defendant. This is beyond comprehension. Some giant firms, including hedge funds, the very scum who destroyed America's financial system, are now reportedly offering victims in lawsuits an immediate payout of 20 to 30 cents on the dollar in exchange for the firm's right to seek the full payment themselves, which could be 40 to 60 cents on the dollar or more. The money fueling the new payouts comes from hedge funds and speculators. The Institute for Legal Reform says the Wall Street money is corrupting the legal system. Do you understand what I just said to you? Have you ever heard of anything like this in your life? They're going to people who are involved in a lawsuit, some of them frivolous, and then they're buying their lawsuit for 30 cents on the dollar. Then they're acquiring the rights to the win, and then they're waiting for it to win. Now, when you get a corporation or a hedge fund with unlimited funds taking over an individual's lawsuit like this, you know and I know they have enough money to buy the case and have it come out any way they want, because the judges can be swayed either by the law, which is an ass, or by outright bribery, which you don't even want to talk about. The article is entitled Investing in Lawsuits. Some call it a disturbing trend. Others call it a win-win for accident victims and low- to middle-income families across America who might not otherwise be able to afford to seek justice in a court of law. That is total rubbish. The issue is legal lending to plaintiffs who don't have the money to pay for surgery related to a claim or pay their bills while their case is tied up in court, or to law firms who can't afford to hire expensive experts or survive a lengthy, drawn-out battle with a corporate giant. So you're getting big hedge funds, Wall Street firms, jumping into the legal lending field. And what they're doing is, you're not going to believe it, hedge funds and big investors have devoted $1 billion right now towards buying lawsuits at any one time, with 250 firms in New York City alone borrowing money to fund cases. You're telling me this is a country that can survive when you have so many vermin with law degrees doing this? It's impossible to believe this country can survive. So what am I going to do, ask you a question now? San Diego John, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, Savage. Sir Savage and Teddy, greetings, and I'm just saying to you that the Queen should have knighted you instead of them banning you in the U.K.
That's right. Instead of blighting me, the U.K. should have knighted me for saying what they needed to hear, because they're losing their country. I agree with you, John,
exactly.
But nothing's changed. John, I have spent hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars on that lawsuit, and it's with help from people like you to my legal fund and my own money, with no help from anybody in the American radio industry. Nobody in the radio industry has come to my aid. Nobody. And I'm the only member of the American media who's ever been banned from a Western nation. They could care less. They're happy it happened to me. So I have no faith anymore in the American media, nor any faith in the American legal system. No faith whatsoever. Maybe I'm a realist.
State those things and give an alarm and a warning to a people who were departing from those principles and that culture, which made them a great empire. And I see you doing the same thing for America, and I believe America is going to respond the same way. I'm confident of it. And I look at your show, and I say your show should be number one. And that it's not, it's a testimony to the fact that, no, we're lost. It's done. It's a loose tooth falling out. It's over. Because they don't want to hear these things.
Well, I'm on some pretty darn good stations. I'm not on some good stations. The show starts late in the day, early in the evening. And for what it is, it still has an awesome, large audience. But the thing for you to know, John, is this, and I think this is the proof is in the pudding. When Trickle Up came out in October, I was a little hesitant. I didn't know how well it would do because The fact of the matter is I actually had started to believe my own enemies. I'm going to be honest with you. I said this on the show before. I had thought that my audience had, by and large, walked away from me. I thought that the show was sort of a little out of it. I didn't know. I really had no way of knowing. You can't gauge these things. When I saw that book rise to number one on Amazon, it not only amazed me, it invigorated me. It gave me a new lease on life. John, and also when it went to number three on the New York Times and number three on the Wall Street Journal, I said my audience is still there for me, and they care about me, and they care about my books. So therefore, people are listening to the show, John. So I am rejuvenated. It's just that right now I'm a little exhausted from business problems, from legal attacks, from vicious situations in my life, which I will divulge one day, and you'll all come to understand what I've been living through. My body is starting to react to it. And so, therefore, everyone has their limits. And I'll take a vacation. I'll come back rejuvenated, and life will go on. That's all.
But the simple fact is nobody excels beyond your scholarship, your academia, your research, your intelligence, the knowledge that you provide, the information, until it just outstrips everybody else, until people are just like, this is the number one show. I look at it and I say, yeah, I see where they are. It's not going
to
make.
Well, look, I can't react to it and say thank you or disagree with you. Obviously, I enjoy the compliment. The fact of the matter is every talk show has its own kind of audience, and then there's an overlap between shows. So many of the same people who might listen to various others would then tune into this show at the end of the day and get a different take on things and have it in my unique perspective. It doesn't mean that I have to say I'm better. I mean, I really do think that I'm the Mozart, and I think that the others, at best, are the Salieri, and I think they know it. I think that the best of them know that they're only Salieri, because they know that their range is limited, and that's the end of it. I was given a great gift, and I have many, many years of education, and I also have a great voice, and I use it. But that doesn't mean that it's me. I'm a vehicle for something else, and the vehicle is that of that something else, I believe, is a voice that is part of the voice of the one of the voices in the chorus trying to save the country. I'm not singing alone here. I'm part of a chorus. I'm just a different voice in that chorus. Maybe you like my voice better. Maybe it stands out more sharply than the other voices. But make no mistake about it. I'm one of many singing the tune that we better save this country from the scoundrels.
What you're saying is true, but the fact is there's just more information coming down your show. And in this desperate and really dark time for America, there should be a hunger and a thirst for it in a way that I'm not seeing. So what you're saying...
Well, let me give you an example. I just want to go in a sidetrack, not to stay on me for a minute, which is very difficult being the business I'm in. I was watching the prelude to World War II for about the 50th time the other night on Military History, and they came up with a new one that was astounding to me. It was about Neville Chamberlain appeasing Hitler. Now, I had known that he appeased Hitler, and I know that Obama is, at best, a Neville Chamberlain. In fact, I even said it before his ascension to power, when I knew he had won against McCain. I said, by what I'm seeing, let's hope that he's only Neville Chamberlain. I think he's much worse than Neville Chamberlain. But let's go back to Neville Chamberlain. Now, Germany has just invaded the Sudetenland. Germany has now taken over that region of Czechoslovakia virtually without firing much weaponry. It was almost a bloodless coup taking over. But Germany at that time was not ready for World War. Germany was told, Hitler was told by his own generals that the troops are not ready, the military's not ready, the tanks can't be moved quick enough, we don't have the transportation equipment for a campaign against these countries, don't do it. And the generals were afraid of one thing. They were afraid that France and England would step in to protect Czechoslovakia should they invade it. Chamberlain goes to Germany, the Munich, and he has a treaty with Hitler. He comes back, he appeases Hitler, and he shows the treaty. And then the narration of this series says, owing to Chamberlain's naivete and pacifism, Hitler was emboldened and the rest is history. In other words, had England had the conservative Winston Churchill in place at that time, instead of this Neville Chamberlain Obama-like character, Hitler would have been stopped in his tracks before he invaded because they would have stood up to him, and that could have changed the course of human history. Do you see what I'm getting at?
But here's what I suspect.
But wait, but let me finish the thought for 1 minute. So what I'm saying is, I'm trying to tell America
that we are being strangled, triangulated from external forces that would destroy us, from internal forces that are destroying us, and unless we get a Winston Churchill, we're going to die as a nation if we have not died already. That's my point.
But I believe definitely 1913, Federal Reserve, since then, these world orders have been working to establish this, and I believe we're moving into something worse than their socialism or Marxism or fascism or communism, but the crown of it is a theocracy, a beast religion that is coming. I believe we're in Revelation, and it's coming, and that everybody's sitting back and seeing it's not quite socialism, and like in China, they're ready to compromise, they're ready to capitulate. And where they're going to find themselves at the end is a total dominance. And so World War II is the example, but I believe something far, far worse is coming.
Well, in a certain sense, you're right. I don't even think World War II is the correct model. I believe that China has already triangulated us. They own all of our treasuries. They own most of our consultants like Henry Kissinger. Let me go down the list. Henry Kissinger. Madeleine Albright, half of the former State Department directors are now working day and night to make sure China has a greater grip on our nation. Oh, yeah, I think they've gone much further than without firing a shot. They've used all of the tenets of their great philosophers. They're defeating us without firing a shot. And in that sense, God only knows what we could wake up to one day. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage. What more do you need to know than the traitor who has leaked classified information? This guy, Julian Assange of WikiLeaks, has just been offered bail by none other than the fat slob, Michael Moore. How many times have I told you that the left wing in this country is seditious? How many times have I told you it's not a laughing matter? How many times have I told you they're out to destroy you and your freedoms? How many times have I told you they're dangerous? How many times have I told you liberalism is a mental disorder? How many times have I told you red diaper doper babies will kill us all unless they're stopped? How much more do you need to know than that the city of Berkeley, filled with the sickest people in the United States of America, not all but a good percentage of them, are trying to make a holiday in faith who has released classified data? It doesn't matter whether or not you think some of the data should have gotten out. That is not the point. That is not the point at all. The point is that he's penetrated every aspect of the governments of the West that he doesn't like, meaning anything that's conservative he released. He released nothing that makes anyone on the left look bad. Anyone who was centrist he tried to destroy. Certainly any conservative he tried to destroy. He did not release one document that I know of that made any leftist look good. Don't you see this as part of the vast left-wing conspiracy to destroy the West? His parents, this creep, met during an anti-war march in Australia in the 1970s. He is a child of the left. He is a red diaper doper baby come to haunt the world. And here we see Americans supporting this cretin, supporting this traitor. And now you have to understand the danger they will put us in. Instead of using his genius skills to undermine the Taliban or to undermine Al-Qaeda, instead of using his great computer skills to crack into the computer messages of those who would destroy us with another bombing, a London bombing type of deal, or a Madrid bombing, instead of penetrating in Arabic these computers and saving Americans, saving people in the West, he'd rather see a city go up in flames. And now we have people like Michael Moore saying, let's give him bail. You see the Hollywood Idiots calling him a hero. You see the city of Berkeley calling him a hero. So if you don't understand which side you're on, then, my friends, I can't help you. The Savage Nation is not for you. I can't help you.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. You know, I have something very interesting to play for you right now. Last week, I appeared on Monica Crowley's show. She's in New York on the weekends. She's on TV on Fox. And she and I have a certain chemistry together. I mean, she really likes me. She admires my show. Naturally, I like her because of that. I like anyone who likes me. But Monica's also a PhD from a real university. She's very intelligent. Listen to this. You got to hear this.
I have to tell you that every single time he is on with me, he is a huge hit. So, of course, I invited him back. He is a nationally syndicated radio superstar. He's also a best-selling author. His latest smash bestseller is called Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attacks on Our Borders, Economy, and Security. Who else but the irrepressible Dr. Michael Savage? Hi, Michael.
Wow, what a buildup. You know, it's impossible to follow such a buildup, Monica.
Well, Michael, you're irrepressible. Did you know that?
That I know. That's for sure.
Well, it's great to have you back. It's always a blast to talk to you. And every single time you're on this program, I get bombarded in my website with emails. They love us together.
Well, they should. We're the last real independents left in America in some ways. There's about probably 10 of us. Did you read the headlines that the Federal Reserve Bank was forced to reveal who they gave those trillions to? And did you see that it went to GE, which owns MSNBC and NBC? Can you believe this? That the
Yes.
government under Obama actually bailed out General Electric, MSNBC, and NBC. It really happened under Bush, by the way, not under Obama. People don't want to accept that.
Yeah, I know. And aren't you glad you work so hard that you bust your tail every day working really hard, Michael, so that your tax dollars can go support MSNBC?
It's unbelievable to me. You know, years ago, I gave a speech in 96 at the Commonwealth Club, and it was called Beware the Government Media Complex. Little did I know that it was this cozy. Little did I know that a government. But remember now, this occurred, the bailout occurred under Bush. And now Bush is being glorified as some great president. I can't believe this.
Yeah, he definitely set the tone for the bailouts because he got the ball rolling. And then Obama, of course, picked up the ball and ran with it. And the disclosures this week that the Fed took our taxpayer dollars, printed extra money, and poured it not just to GE to support MSNBC and NBC News, but also poured it into all of these other private companies, Verizon, Caterpillar, and then all these foreign banks on top of it. I mean, it has gotten completely insane. It's pure madness.
Monica, there are more secrets. The federal government is withholding data for $885 billion in loans that they have yet to disclose and will not disclose. They withhold collateral data, withholding collateral data, and they're denying we, the taxpayers, a gauge of the risk that they're involved with. We're talking about the $3.3 trillion in emergency lending to stem the financial crisis. And here we go, finding out where some of it went. This is taxpayer money. This did not help the taxpayers directly. It helped the bankers. It helped the corporations that are cozy with the government. And so, therefore, now what's going to happen? The answer is probably nothing, because we no longer live in a participatory democracy, do we?
Michael, I want to take a step back for a second with you and ask you a big picture question. Where are we in America today? I mean, we just talked about the bank bailouts and too big to fail and duplicity on all sides. We talk about the failure to have consequences for failure in this country, whether you're a kindergarten kid who gets a prize in dodgeball even though you've lost because nobody wants to make you feel bad and protect your self-esteem, all the way up to the CEO of Citibank. Oh, we can't have you fail. Here's a prize. Mm-hmm. Here's $1 trillion of government money. Where are we in America? Have we lost our way? Are you optimistic, pessimistic, and what can we do about it?
Well, I tend to be a pessimist with a tinge of optimism, or as I said to someone last week, I'm a glass half full kind of guy, not a glass half empty. I really don't know whether we can recover from this, because there are certain elements in our society that never existed before. The large influx of non-English speaking illegal aliens, for example, who refuse to desire to assimilate, I think pretty much predicts where this country will be in 10 or 20 years. You know, I am the son of an immigrant. I respect immigration, but I don't respect people who come in here illegally and won't learn the language, wave the Mexican or Nicaraguan flag, and jeer those who wave the American flag. And I think that tells us where we're going to be. And the only solution would be for us to have a Winston Churchill arise from the mass of politicians that we have who are not leading us right now. The most dangerous threat to our survival is national security, the enemy within, the fact that our Homeland Security Department sees the average American as a potential terrorist. But when they look at the radical Islamic terrorist, they won't even define them as terrorists. They won't use the I word. They won't use the M word. But the average American, your grandmother perhaps, an old man in a wheelchair, is considered a suspect every time he wants to fly a plane. I think the government is upside down. It's Alice in Wonderland. It's going to take almost an act of God, Monica, for the country to be saved. And it's going to require some kind of extraordinary individual to arise from the unknown masses to save us. That's what I have the hope for.
Do you see him or her out there?
Well, they're right on this show. You and I could save America, that's for sure.
A Savage Crowley ticket, 2012? What do you think? Are you down with that?
I'm not a politician, but it wouldn't be bad. I can guarantee you we could do a better job than Obama's doing. And
oh,
Mitch McConnell,
about 1,000 times better, Savage. What are you kidding?
And probably a little better than Mitch McConnell can do, the gobbler. I mean, for God's sakes, these people are like professional politicians. They don't even know what the word America means. All they know is what their party stands for and what their special interests stand for. When did America go out the window? Yeah, I don't know who the individual might be. I think that the individual has been born. I think the individual may be fighting in Afghanistan. The individual could be a school teacher, for all I know, or the individual could be in Congress right now. I don't know, Monica, but I'm in that regard, on a day-to-day level, I'm sort of pessimistic, but on a cosmic long-scale level, I actually am quite optimistic.
Final question for you, Michael, and then I'll let you go. It does seem that there are two real levels of fear out there among our fellow Americans. The first level of fear is immediate and urgent about the economic situation. Am I going to still have a job? Will I ever be able to find another job? Is the bank going to foreclose on my house? But I think that there's a more profound fear that's percolating underneath that first level of fear, which is that the very soul of America is changing. And that we are essentially helpless to stop it. I think the Tea Party is a movement that's trying to stop it. I think some Republicans up on Capitol Hill and those who were just elected get it. But I think it's such a tremendous deep-seated worry of most Americans that I think you are going to see a tipping point coming sooner rather than later. And that's why I'm optimistic.
You are an optimist. You see that? I drew that out of you, Monica.
Yes, you did.
I drew your optimism from the depths of your despair.
Only you could do that, Michael Savage.
Okay. Well, you see that? We had a productive session today, didn't we? Now, I will be booking you for further therapy. Please see my secretary on the way out.
You come really cheap, too, which is why I love our therapy sessions. Michael,
I knew you were capable of I knew you had fangs after all is said and done.
Love you, Michael Savage. You are wonderful. Thank you so much for doing this with me again. It's always a joy to talk to you.
Thanks, Monica. Really appreciate it.
You bet. The great Michael Savage. Check out his website, michaelsavage.com, to find out where you can hear his nationally syndicated radio show near you. And his latest huge bestseller, which is a tremendous book. You should read it. It is critical reading for every American. It's called Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attacks on Our Borders, Economy, and Security.
Savage.
Well, here are some of the news headlines that have not yet made it out there. Air Force blocks access to websites for posting WikiLeaks docs. U.S. Air Force blocks access on its network to at least 25 media websites, including the New York Times and The Guardian, because they posted the secret diplomatic cables published by WikiLeaks, saying the decision is meant to protect spillage of classified material. Good for them. GOP says spending bill is a total mess. Why? Because there are thousands of pork barrel projects known as earmarks hidden in the bill that were put there by, I guess, both parties. Now, here's an interesting story. In the strongest language to date, the new Marine Corps chief speaks out against the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, saying it could have dire consequences on the battlefield. Can you believe that we still have somebody in the military who's not a Stepford wife, somebody standing up to the Obama maniacs? The chief of the Marines says a distraction of gays may cost lives. Go tell that to Defense Secretary Gates or the so-called chairman of the Joint Chiefs, a Mullen. It's amazing. Did stem cells cure an HIV-positive man? Doctors say a man living with HIV may have been cured after receiving a transplant of stem cells from a donor carrying a rare inherited gene mutation that seems to make carriers virtually immune to HIV infection. That's actually great news for a number of reasons, and I don't have to spell them out for you. Fake drugs called growing global menace. Now, what do we mean by fake drugs? Growing global menace. You may not know it, but many of the medications that you buy are coming from bootleg laboratories. I learned this a long, long time ago, that you often get what you pay for, especially when it comes to medication. I learned it when I was in grad school, and I was working for a pharmacologist who had come from one of America's great research corporations, a legitimate firm, I mean a big company. He was director of research. He told me that, for example, Bayer aspirin is clearly the best there is. The quality control was different than the knockoff, you know, generic brands. The same is true, by the way, with generic drugs. You may not know this. There's been a lot of talk about it, but most of you don't know that generic drugs are not the same as the designated branded drug. They're not just the same and cheaper. They're made differently, the standards are different, and the quality control is much different. And that's why I actually, when I get a prescription, which is very rare, I always insist upon the designated name brand rather than the equivalent. I won't take the equivalent, whether it be a simple drug or an aspirin. So fake drugs cause real concerns for officials. Not convinced that Americans are prepared to slow down in their pursuit of buying cheaper merchandise online, a coalition of government officials and private industry executives met at the White House today to address the broad range of problems associated with the sales of counterfeit products. So now listen to this. Victoria Espinel, the Obama administration's intellectual property czar, estimated that 1/6 of all Americans who bought drugs online did so without a prescription. Now, I don't know which side she's on, truthfully, but I could care less. I don't like czars. They should all be fired, by the way. However, I believe that we should absolutely not buy counterfeit drugs. I think that the government has an obligation to tell people that counterfeit drugs are dangerous. I think it's very important that people understand that legitimate pharmaceutical operations are entitled to a profit, and that since it costs about $1 billion the last I checked to take a drug all through the legislative process, the testing process, etc., to become a legitimate drug, I think a major corporation has the right to recover profits from their medications. And what better evidence is there that we haven't seen Cuba produce one medicine for the world? And they'll just say, oh, well, socialized medicine is so wonderful. Cheaper drugs are so great. Let's get everything for nothing. Really? And where do you think your next breakthrough medication is going to come from? Cuba? North Korea? Syria? It's not going to come from those countries. In order to create breakthrough medications that all of us seem to want so badly, corporations have to invest in them. Many of you don't understand this because you have never owned a business. You've never had the audacity to invest money in creating a product or a service. So you don't understand what it takes to create a vegetable stand, let alone a prescription drug. So when I hear the profits are too high in the pharmaceutical industry, I totally disagree. Now, I've also argued that there are too many prescriptions in some areas, and I've said that. For example, I believe that the creation of these categories of sell drugs to children as young as 2 years old, and I think that's a crime. That doesn't mean that all pharmaceuticals are criminal and that all pharmaceutical companies are not entitled to a profit. There's two different subjects here, by the way. But the problem of fake drugs, we read, also extends to the legitimate pharmacies. And they quote a music professor who told the audience how he unwittingly bought bogus drugs from his local chain drugstore. You hear? Chain drugstore. He said the drug, which he had previously used without problems, suddenly caused a terrible burning sensation. So he asked his pharmacist about the situation and was told, you may have gotten the fake stuff. It turned out that multiple batches of cooked-up powder disguised as medication infiltrated the legitimate supply chain and was not discovered until the fake meds reached the consumer. You hear this? Now, how did that happen? How does it happen that fake drugs can wind up inside a legitimate pharmaceutical chain. How does that happen? Well, I don't know how it happened. I believe that it happens because either the pharmaceutical chains themselves are involved with the fake drug manufacturers and are trying to make a bigger profit, or that the FDA inspectors are being paid off to let this go unnoticed. But all I can tell you is that I think the simplest way to beat this, and there's no guarantee, by the way, anymore, the world is so filled with counterfeits. If they can counterfeit a diamond, which they can do, how many diamonds are out there in the world that are fake and you don't even know it? You may be wearing a diamond you think is real, it could be a fake. You wouldn't even know it, would you? We're not experts. How would you know? How would you know anymore with fake art, with fake presidents, with fake pharmaceuticals, with fake war heroes, with fake degrees? How would you know if you're even getting a legitimate drug anymore, even if it says Pfizer on it? How do you know if the Viagra that you're using wasn't made by some shyster in a basement in Syosset, Long Island, with a pill pressing machine that he bought when he was thrown out of the vitamin business and he went to a prison for 2 months? That he converted his pill presser from making vitamin C into making a fake Viagra. How do you know? I don't know anymore. That's why I don't take him if I can avoid him. We're living in the ersatz world where everything is collapsing around us for a million reasons. That's called corruption. That's all in plain English. This is called corruption. You have a corrupt, I already went down the list. Everything is ersatz. An ersatz president who you know is faking it. Everything is like created. Everything's created. So you people don't know which way to turn. None of us do. So we go back to the basics. We eat comfort food. We, like the sale of beer, for example. During the Great Depression, the sale of beer went up and the sale of smoking tobacco went up. Why? Because people needed a relief from the pressures of a down economy. So now you have a government that has driven cigarettes, for example, into oblivion. You can't smoke. It's evil. They took them out of prisons. I mean, what is a prisoner supposed to do who wants to, who relied upon cigarettes to relax? Well, take a guess what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to go to the quack doctor in the prison, and they're supposed to say they need a medication. And so the prisons are now floating in sedatives provided by drug companies that do billions of dollars with prisoners. Whereas in the past, the prisoner might have smoked a cigarette. Now the prisoner now has to go and get a Xanax or something, or Prozac. Take a look at our military. Do you know that a large percentage of our people serving overseas are drugged on psychiatric drugs? How is this possible? How can you fight a war if you're on a medication? You forbid the guys to have a drink before going into battle because you're afraid that they'll make a mistake or they won't shoot straight? Well, you're right. Probably. I'm not even sure that's correct. Because as a matter of fact, during many, many wars, the men took a drink before being forced to charge into a hail of bullets. Kind of made sense to me that if you carried a whiskey flask and you were on the front in a trench and the guy blew a whistle and you had to get up or you'd get shot in the back, it wouldn't have been a bad idea to take a swig out of the brandy flask before you met your maker. But now, no, you have to take a swig of the chemical that was manufactured by some manufacturer in Washington in order to make certain that the machine of the government, the pharmaceutical medical complex keeps rolling on. So that's it so far. It's the state of the world as one man sees it. I hope you've not enjoyed the show, because if you have, you're a very sick puppy indeed.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
tough day because I'm in distinct pain today. I'll have to do the show the best I can. Thank God I have a dog. Because before the show, I was in bed before coming into the studio. And strangely how dogs work, because as I was lying on my side, because I can't lie on my back because of the excruciating pain, the dog moved. He never sleeps next to me. He sleeps at the foot of the bed. I don't know how, but he moved right into the crook of my back and put his body up against me through the covers. I guess dogs can sense pain or something. So thank God for dogs, and I wish I could say the same about mankind. Speaking of mankind, Robert Gibbs, that's the human gefilte fish who works for Obama, he's the spokesmouth. And he says that the health care ruling, although it's been declared unconstitutional by a federal judge, here's a spokesmouth without legal training saying that we're confident that it is constitutional. That's interesting. That is very, very interesting. How do you like that? WikiLeaks could be vulnerable to the Espionage Act. No kidding, Sherlock. Sweden bomber, the Muslim, is a so-called friendly immigrant who turned radical. Turned radical? They said he was like any other young man in England, loved life, partied, drank alcohol, had girlfriends. And they're surprised that he would do something like this. Huh. Even played basketball. So how did old Mr. Friendly Muslim become radical Muslim? Well, it seems he went to a town just north of London, and he met a girl the same age as him, also a Muslim of Swedish citizenship. Isn't that wonderful? See, diversity is something that you have to embrace, or else you can be arrested. Because after all, diversity is superior to nationalism. It's superior to even survival. Diversity is more important. And the rest is history. He tried to set off a bomb in Sweden and killed himself, so thank God for that. But the Stockholm bomber, which you're not reading anything about during your Christmas festivities here in the U.S. of A., said that the bombings are yet to come. He also said that Sharia law is already in Europe. Europe is already Islamicized. Now, before we depart international news, we must go back to yesterday. Yesterday, a federal court ruled that a central plan of the Obamacare violates the U.S. Constitution. U.S. District Judge Henry Hudson said that the law's requirement that most Americans carry insurance or pay a penalty exceeds the constitutional boundaries of congressional power. This is very good. This is very, very good. Because it is unconstitutional. And I spent all of yesterday's show, almost all of yesterday's show, reading from Trickle Up Poverty on the health scare fraud, what's really in the bill. And I quoted from the case of a little Jewish chicken company from the 1930s. It's a very important story. Because the Schechter Poultry Company story is all about a government overreaching, trying to centralize power and being slapped down because they stepped on ordinary people, in this case, the Schechter brothers. And I spend a few pages on it in Trickle Up Poverty, but I want to read something from the book that's very important. The Schechter brothers appealed their case, which ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court. And against all odds, in Schechter Poultry Corp. versus United States, guess who won? That's right, the little kosher butchers beat FDR. The Supreme Court ruled that FDR's program was unconstitutional on several levels. And the main level was the way his program, that's the president's program, sought to regulate interstate commerce. Constitutionally speaking, interstate law is governed by the states and not the feds. Furthermore, the Supreme Court said that FDR's regulations were an usurpation of congressional power. Sound familiar, Nancy Pelosi? But most interestingly, after this decision was handed down in favor of the kosher butchers, the very famous justice, Louis Brandeis, told a lawyer representing Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal the following: "This is the end of this business of centralization, and I want you to go back and tell the president that we're not going to let this government centralize everything. It's come to an end." Can you imagine if we had a justice who could speak plain English today? Well, what if we had one of our Supremes drawing a line in the sand against Obama in such a direct manner? Now, this brought us to how Obama's Frankenstein health care bill, okay, can be repealed, I wrote. 58% of Americans wanted it repealed back then. It's much higher now. And I said this, there is something you can do to stop Obamacare rather than wait around for the check pants Republicans to act. And I gave you a plan. And I went into all the details of how to fight Obamacare. And I am happy to tell you that my architectural plan found in Trickle Up Poverty, which you really should read, you owe it to yourself, I believe was a model for the courts. I'm not saying they used the book in its entirety, obviously, but let me read you the conclusion of that chapter. Obama is a liberty stealer. Obama's a business killer. Obama's a spreader of trickle-up poverty. If this man can get away with force-feeding us socialized medicine, I wrote, when the majority of American people do not want it, what's to stop him from doing anything else he may damn well please? Don't think for 1 minute that socialized medicine will be the last stop on the train bound for perdition. When the stooges in Washington follow the marching orders from Obama like lemmings, and when they continue taking us down the road of socialism in the days ahead, don't think this benign joyride will end well. It is aimed at circumventing the Bill of Rights. It is aimed at robbing your freedoms. It is aimed at destroying the middle class. Only the American people can stop him. I just showed you how. Use the religious freedom exemption. If four immigrant butchers could stop FDR, you might stop Barack Obama.
Savage.
Look, we've been talking about the Obama tax cut deal and how he agrees with the Republicans and how his left wing is not happy with the idea of compromising with the opposition. And how the right questions how we will pay for the unemployment benefits that are added to it. In other words, everyone's unhappy. Joining us now from the Cato Institute is Daniel Mitchell with the good, the bad, and the ugly on this tax compromise. Daniel Mitchell, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on the program again.
Well, what's your view here?
Nobody is happy with this deal. If you're a big spending liberal like Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi or Obama, you like class warfare, so you hate the idea of missing out on an opportunity to stick it to those evil, awful, bad, rich people with higher tax rates. So they're not happy about that. If you're a conservative, Republican, Tea Party type, you hate the idea that they're paying for some additional spending. Well, actually, they're not paying for it. That's the problem. There's all this new spending, but none of it's being financed by cutting some of the waste, fraud, and abuse elsewhere in the budget. This is a typical political compromise. Everybody has something to like. Everyone has something to hate.
Wait. Hold on a minute. What is the good part?
What's good about this deal is that we're not going to get hit with higher tax rates next year, and that's saying something. Now, admittedly, it's just saying that something bad isn't going to happen. It would have been nice if they actually did something good instead. But if we had across the board higher tax rates next year, especially higher tax rates on investors, entrepreneurs, small business owners, that definitely would have been very negative for the economy. And if we had done nothing at all, the death tax would have come roaring back to life at 55%. It's going to be 35% instead. Now, that's still bad because it should be zero, but I'd rather have 35 than 55. So I'm not a fan of this deal. It's very, very frustrating after an election where the American people said, no, we want less government, lower taxes, get Washington out of our lives. We have to have this sort of kissing your sister version of public policy.
Is this a compromise that we needed here and now?
There's an old saying about don't make the perfect the enemy of the good. At the Cato Institute, we want to radically downsize the size of the federal government. So anytime there's some sort of political compromise in Washington, you know it's going to rub us the wrong way because we're going to want to go much farther in trying to make government smaller in line with what our founding fathers wanted. On the other hand, I hate to think what would have happened to our economy if we let tax rates go up across the board next year. So it's not a good deal, but boy, I'm not sure I really like the idea of what would have happened if we didn't do anything. And I think what the real lesson of all this is that the 2010 elections were a stalemate. And in other words, having the Republicans beginning next year being in control of the House doesn't give them power to do anything that conservatives might like, but it probably means they have the power to stop things that liberals like. So we're going to be in a holding pattern, which is not great, but it's certainly better than having a lot of statist big government legislation washing across us.
Well, give us the really bad news in this bill, okay? Give us the really bad news.
The bad news is that we had this big, expensive extension of unemployment benefits, which economists widely recognize extend unemployment because you're paying people to be jobless. And a lot of people take advantage of that by waiting until their unemployment benefits are going to run out before they look for a job. And, of course, what happens is by luring people into dependency, you're fundamentally eroding their work habits, their work skills. You're putting a big gap in their employment history. And frankly, why on earth we should be trying to create jobs, not subsidize joblessness. But then, even if we decide it's a good idea to do that and extend unemployment benefits, are the politicians really telling us that nowhere in a $3.7 trillion budget is there any way of cutting other spending to pay for this? That's what's really offensive. We've had a giant explosion in the burden of government spending, not just under Obama, but also under Bush. And the politicians apparently have zero appetite to finally rein in a greedy, grasping, bloated federal government.
How is the death tax affected where money is taxed twice?
Well, it depends on whether you're a half glass half full or glass half empty kind of person. Right now, in 2010, there is no death tax, which, of course, is exactly the right policy because you shouldn't be double taxed just for dying. On the other hand, in 2011, if we did nothing at all, we'd have a death tax of 55%. They sort of cut the baby in half, 35%. That's bad news compared to what we have this year. So if you're a wealthy person, you might want to go ahead and kill yourself before January 1st. On the other hand, compared to 55% next year, 35% is much, much better. So again, it's one of these, you know, what's the old line? Don't watch sausages or laws being made because you'll lose your appetite. And this is clearly one of these situations.
What is the ugly part?
The ugly part of this deal, and this is sort of part of my the good, the bad, the ugly, with apologies to Clint Eastwood on using that phrase, the ugly part is all the special interest, corrupt insider provisions that have been stuck in the bill for things like ethanol producers and whatnot. These are sort of, you know, in Washington, it's considered the grease that oils the wheels of legislation. But of course, what it really means is that well-heeled lobbyists with insider access, usually former politicians or former congressional staffers, get big bucks from a special interest group to make these sure these little pieces of pork get stuck into a big piece of legislation. Now, you know, I'm not naive. I've been in Washington for a while. It is the way the game works. And if you put in these corrupt little provisions as a price to be paid for making America freer and more prosperous, I'll hold my nose, but I'll take it. But this is one of these cases where we have some good things, some bad things, and then some corrupt things. And so, I don't know, your judgment's as good as mine whether this is worth doing.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Almost certainly, Nancy Pelosi, even though she's unhappy, is probably going to let this come up for a vote, and almost certainly it will pass. Republicans don't like some of the spending and some of the pork. Democrats don't like the fact that they're not getting to attack rich people. But I think both sides have decided, okay, this is the best we're going to get, and it's one of those kinds of deals. So I think it will go into effect, and I think we will dodge the bullet of higher tax rates next year. But here's the key thing. no matter whether you like this tax bill or whether you don't like this tax bill, the one thing it obviously doesn't do, it doesn't rein in the growth of government spending. That's the elephant in the living room. That's the giant threat to America's prosperity. That's what's threatening to turn America into a bankrupt welfare state like Greece. That's what we have to fix. This legislation doesn't do anything to help that. That's objective number one next year.
Are there any signs that things are going to get better?
I think the economy is probably not going to get much bang for the buck out of all this, because let's not forget, we're not actually cutting taxes with this legislation. We're simply keeping taxes where they are right now. So there's no reason at all to think that we'll get much additional growth, except to the extent that you think there was a lot of uncertainty out there and investors and business owners and entrepreneurs were holding back on creating new jobs because they were waiting to see what was going to happen. If their taxes were going to go up, they weren't going to do it. So maybe the fact that we're now going to see taxes not go up, maybe we'll see some additional growth next year as a result of that.
Daniel Mitchell, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Appreciate having the chance to talk to you, Michael. Keep up the good work educating people about why we need to control big government.
The bottom line is government spending is still going through the roof. It is still out of control. They're spreading trickle-up poverty as fast as they can.
Savage.
Hey, la dee ding dong, a lang a lang a lang, boom ba do, ba do ba do ba ba. Oh, life could be a dream if I could take you up in paradise up above. If you would tell me I'm the only one that you love, life could be a dream, sweetheart. Hello, hello again, shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again. Oh, life could be.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. Now, we have a very interesting soundbite of the poor president at the G20 meeting in South Korea, where he is challenged by a reporter from CBS, and he gets very defensive, almost adolescent in his reaction. Listen to three.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was our only complaints, concerns, or...
Wow. No, seriously. You know, look, did you hear that? This is frightening. He's very, very defensive about this question. This is a president. This is not a teacher. When a student challenges him, listen again. Listen. Hold it. Let's start again. You say, okay, big deal. Stop blowing it up. He's just a human being. He's had a rough week. Look at all the time. Look at what he had to do in India, all those meals, all those banquets. And look at the trouble he had in Indonesia, visiting his school, visiting the madrasas he went to. It was tough work. So now he's in South Korea. It's the last leg of the trip. And he gets a question that's real from Chip Reed. Listen to it again.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was our only complaints, concerns, or...
Sounds like a husband with a wife. That's something like a husband would say. What am I, no compliments? It's like, nah. It's like, you didn't put that in the list. It's almost like a chick would say that, truthfully. The other way around is what it is. Where the husband asks something of the wife, and someone says, well, what did someone say about your housekeeping? What were some of the concerns that the relatives had about your housekeeping and how you took care of your house? And then the chick says, what am I, no compliments? You didn't have that one on your list of how clean I am, how good I am in the kitchen, my only complaints and concerns? It's pretty unbelievable. Listen to three again.
What was the number one complaint, concern, or piece of advice that you got from foreign leaders about the U.S. economy and your stewardship of the economy?
What about compliments? You didn't put that in the list. There was our only complaints, concerns, or...
All right, you know, it's almost sad now. See, funny, I don't like to see him on the ropes like this. I want a strong president, even a leftist. I want him to be, you know, macho. I don't like that metro thing. The best was the 07 where he, 06, where he calls a Chinese a Korean. Listen to 6.
This gentleman right here, he's got his hand up. He's the only one who took me up on it. Go ahead. And I'll probably need a translation, though, if you're asking the question in Korean. In fact, I definitely will need a translation.
Unfortunately, I hate to disappoint you, President Obama. I'm actually Chinese.
Oh, my God. I actually want to have Chinese food now. I told you, I'm very suggestible. When he was in Indonesia, I wanted the rice table. I couldn't find one. When he's in India, I went to an Indian restaurant. I ate the buffet. I like Chinese people. I've always gotten along with them. I only wish they weren't communists. That's the one thing. Why can't they just all go capitalist and get rid of that Mao Tse-Tung business once and for all? I admire them. They've always been an industrious nation. We're going back, they had 6-masted sailing ships. You have no idea how advanced they were. They got set back by communism. First, they were set back by the warlords, which killed all of the development of China. But the worst thing that ever happened to the Chinese people was Mao Tse-Tung's revolution, which he got from Karl Marx. His brain was ruined. Karl Marx ruined most of the world with his insanity. He's caused more death and destruction than any single, shall I say, philosopher in the history of the world. The worst. Like a scythe taken to the middle class across the globe. Go tell that to your tenured professor brainwashing your daughter, who's going to come home for Thanksgiving with purple hair and rings on various body orifices. Go ahead, go tell her why that happened to her. She's going to sit at the Thanksgiving table sneering at you, probably on either marijuana or crack cocaine. God only knows what she'll be doing in the bathroom. All because of your college education that you killed yourself for. You know, I feel bad for kids. You look at them in the mall. I feel bad for the children. I look at the parents. The women look like Stepford wives. They're like blank. They all got great bodies. You know, everyone exercises. They starve themselves. They're anorexic. They look like post-op transvestites. It's true. But okay, some of us like that look. It's not such a bad look. You know, today, and everything's different. I mean, you look back 100 years how women look. They look like women. You know, normal hips, Norman, what? Like a normal woman. Now, if they look like a normal woman, ugh, I don't want to look like a woman. I want to look like a guy who's just going to come back with, like, surgery. But anyway, let's put that aside. It's just personal taste with people. But you look in their eyes, they're like blank. It's like staring into a blankness. I preferred, like, regular women with carriages rocking them outside, like, Longfellow Avenue, wearing, like, babushkas and big dresses. It was another world. I mean, the children weren't kidnapped at the rate they are today. They didn't wind up in shallow graves. The mothers were with them every second. They knew the world was filled with horrendous monsters out there. They would kill a man who looked at the child in my day. The mothers would kill him with a rolling pin. They would have attacked him with umbrellas, with anything they had. They looked him one look at one child, they'd beat the hell out of him. All the women would have attacked the man in the street. Let's say a strange guy came to the neighborhood, and they were like rocking their children. Toddlers were running around. The boys are playing. If a strange guy came by and looked the wrong way, the women would have beat the guy up. Now it's like they invite him in to look at the gas line. Sure, come on in. Why not? I'm tolerant. I've been brainwashed in school into accepting everything. Except people who love America. That's the one thing we can't tolerate, is the American flag and the love for America. Everything else is fine. Fine. Mexican flag, perfect. That's all. I'm just rambling on with my views of the world. I know you love it because you think the way I do. I'm giving voice to your innermost thoughts. That's all I can do on the radio. That's my single most important role. Forget reading the news and giving you my views. Very important. The most important thing, though, is the emotional bond I create with you by exhibiting what's inside me and daring to speak it out. And then you say, holy God, it's exactly what I think. I'm like, you guys, amazing. It's like he's reading my mind. I know, believe me, I know, 16 years in the making. It didn't happen overnight. I'm no overnight success, my friends. No, trust me on that one. There's no overnight deal here. This long time in the making. It took millions of years for me to get here. Think of the evolutionary process. Ancestors through privation, they were still reading books. 1,000 years ago, they were reading like the Bible, studying and reading books. I mean, they didn't just get born yesterday. What do you think? This is an accident that you like the show? You could even do this if you play golf. I mean, truthfully. It's not about education. It's about inspiration. It's all, it really, it's not about education. It's about inspiration. So what would you like to do on the show today? I'm going to get a hero, meatball hero. I was ruining my diet and my arteries. I was like anxious. I reverted to childhood foodie. It was so good. It was so good, man. That meatball hero, when you haven't had one in 29 years, the way that bread cracks and you, oh God, with sauce dripping down on your neck. You have to lean over. You know, I couldn't even wait to get it home in the car. I walked around, I leaned over, like you bite into it, you burn your palate, like one of those. You know how that good it is? You let yourself go for a minute, because that was the day Obama was giving away another part of our national security. And I read that the Long Dong missile could wipe out the West Coast. I figured, the heck with it, have a meatball hero. You know what I mean? So I'm eating the meatball hero, trying to avoid burning my palate. Avoid gravy on my shirt, leaning over, you know, and I'm walking around and I walk past the Chinese restaurant, which has outdoor tables. And lo and behold, there's three little cute, little sweet, little 12, 14, 14 year old, like high school or junior high girls, like innocent little lambs. And they're eating outside. So I'm like a curious guy. I look at everything. Nothing passes my eye. I look at everything. That's how I was originally a biologist. I looked at plants and things that you can't believe about plants and animals. So I look at everything. I want to see what the girls are eating. Look what they're eating. They're sharing a box of white rice, and they're pouring some hot sauce over it, and they're eating it like it's a feast. And I said to myself, these poor children, they're malnourished. That's why their brains don't function. The Asians had beriberi from eating white rice all those years. If they were eating just plain brown rice, all right. But they're not. They're eating milled rice. They're eating a beriberi diet, and their dumb mothers don't even tell them what nutrition is. The mothers don't even know. The girls think that they're doing something green by eating just rice. They're not eating any animal product. They're living light on the earth. And the poor children, they're deficient in every major nutrient. And I'm going to say something to them, they arrest me. So I have to button my lip. That's why I wrote Healing Children Naturally, because... And I'm not selling a book. I can't believe it. How the lack of knowledge has permeated every corner of society. So don't assume that because they live in an affluent white suburb that they know what they're doing. Most of them are dumb bunnies. You understand? And their children are the same. And it's frightening and it's heartbreaking. Believe me. That's why I said to you, it's good to have knowledge. But if you eat of the apple of knowledge, what is it? What good is it if the people around you are ignoramuses? All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Very interesting news out there, which you're not going to read. 1-800-449-8255. Richard Holbrooke died. Now he's being held up as some kind of peace-loving ambassador to the United Nations, who brokered the Dayton Peace Accords. Well, what were the Dayton Peace Accords? It was gangsterism. Fundamentally, the Dayton Peace Accords stole territory from the Serbian people that was theirs since the 1300s and gave it to the Bosnian Muslims. He, along with Henry Kissinger and David Rockefeller, directed the American Friends of the Bilderberg. Now, who are the Bilderbergs? You'll have to look into trickle-up poverty to see what this is all about. Many of you understand that there's secret groups that run the world. Really? Did you know that from 01 till 08, Holbrooke was a member of the board of directors of the now almost bankrupt AIG? Did you know that? Ah, didn't know anything about that, huh? Well, the firm engaged in wildly speculative credit default insurance schemes that may cost the taxpayers hundreds of billions. And it did already. You got to remember that old Richard Holbrooke, now held up as a peace-loving ambassador, was also a member of the globalist outfit, the Trilateral Commission, along with his good buddy, old Hank Kissinger. Yeah, there's a lot more to the story, which we'll talk about in the Savage Nation. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan and what's going on in the White House, but with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's Carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. Rich nations urge to weigh Robinhood tax to help the poor. Can you believe this? And some of the communists there and the so-called world leaders are saying that we should stabilize the global economy through a Robin Hood tax aimed at collecting money from rich nations to give to the poor. That's interesting, because Hillary's already given some of that Robin Hood money to the Palestinians. So they can be, I don't know, they can be happier. She just gave away how much? $150 million more. Play Hillary Clinton again. I want to get my numbers right.
The United States and our international partners are committed to supporting the Palestinian Authority as it works to overcome these challenges. So today, I am pleased to announce that the United States has transferred an additional $150 million in direct assistance to the Palestinian Authority. This brings our direct budget assistance to a total of $225 million for the year, and our overall support and investment to nearly $600 million this year.
That's the new game. So that's the new game in town. They rob you, and they call it an investment. Now, at the risk of your displeasure, the Savage Manifesto in Trickle-Up Poverty, which is not to be dismissed, in fact, it should be studied, has 37 points. I'm actually looking to see if it includes ending foreign aid. I don't know. I must have missed that. I don't see it. I don't see that one. How did I miss that one? Keep the estate tax zero, say no to the VAT tax, reduce pay and pensions for civil servants, defend the Defense of Marriage Act, encourage childbearing among taxpaying citizens, make abortions illegal, end affirmative action, limit welfare benefits, voting reform, boot the czars, put the brakes on GM, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act, reinstate the Wall Street uptick rule, privatize the regulation of Wall Street, encourage risk-taking and entrepreneurship, institute tort reform, run the country like a business, not an empire. I apologize. I should have been number 38. Eliminate all foreign aid immediately. We can't afford it. We're a basket case. In fact, we need foreign aid from China, the country that's robbed us blind owing to the traitors inside our own government. Shall I repeat that in case you missed it? Owing to the traitors inside our own government. You want me to name a few of them? You want me to name some of the law firms that led the charge of China into America, that reversed the course of this great nation? Shall we start? Let me start with some of the more prominent names of people who are consultants to China for the last number of years, who are former governmental officials, who make certain that China gets her way in our halls of Congress. Let us start with Madeleine Albright. Then let's go to Sandy Berger, Dr. Sox. Remember Dr. Berger, the man who stole very, very top secret documents that were found in his underwear? The former national security advisor, a low-life lawyer from the firm of Hogan & Hartson in Washington, D.C. Hogan & Hartson, one of the principal vehicles for the China trade, sent their man into the national security position to make certain that China got her way in this country. You want investigations? You want to go back a little further? There's a lot of people who know how far back you have to go. I'll go back a little further. Let us go back to Bill Clinton himself, who had a little relationship with the chairman of the Democrat National Committee. I think his name was Schwartz or Shapiro. Does anyone know his name, exactly his name? A gentleman who created Loral Space and Technology. A man who had started with a parking meter company in the Bronx and then built it into a space and technology company and then used government military technology to launch rockets in order to launch satellites into the sky. And he did so in China because it was cheaper to launch the rockets out of China. And in doing so, he shared military technology with the Chinese. And we were told then, because I was a talk show host then, that they would never use this technology for the military. Oh, no. You know they wouldn't do a thing like that. After all, we were told by Schwartz, or was it Shapiro, who said they would never do that. Where is old Schwartz or Shapiro today? Where is he? Is he anywhere near Madoff? Does he have anything to do with Madoff? I doubt it. But we know Madoff is in jail for having bilked tens of thousands of people of their life savings. But what about the individuals who have bilked us of our national pride? What about the people who have bilked us of our national security? What about the people who have built this of our national identity? Shouldn't they be sharing a cell in the same prison with Mr. Madoff? Aren't those crimes just as bad? Some would ask. I think. Yes, I think so. But the chance of it happening is nil, less than nil, less than zero. So let's, we the little people, think about what's going on. A missile trail seen off the coast of California by a CBS cameraman, identified as the trail of a missile fired either from a surface ship or a submarine. The U.S. Pentagon says we don't know what it is, but it's definitely not from a ship. But you little people, now go into your UFO fantasy. Now go into your little late night radio shows and start talking about UFOs. That's where we want you to go with it. Just be a useful moron. Go on late night radio and talk about it was a UFO and little men and little green men came down off the coast of California and blah, blah, blah. That'll put them to sleep again. Blah, blah, blah. So we can make certain that the military is safe for diversity.